Welcome to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast. Yes, it's 100% unscripted, 100% unrehearsed, 100% unedited, and 100% real. I'm your host, Mark A. Preston. And today my guest is a freelance e-commerce SEO consultant. And the reason I wanted to invite him onto the show is because he has an interesting take on what's called grandchild pages, which I'm sure we'll get into. Please welcome Joe Fisher. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Mark. How's it going?
Very well, thanks. So for the people watching and listening to this podcast who doesn't know who you are, could you give us an overview of how and when you started in the industry and what's happened between now and then and now?
Yeah, no problem. So I first was introduced to the term SEO about eight or nine years ago. Started sort of fresh out of uni working at a few call centres. So that was sort of chucked straight in at the deep end, flogging broadband to people, just ringing up people when they're trying to have the tea, watching Netflix or whatever, and annoying them. So got a bit of a backbone from that. It was quite a hard job, but it was the only one available sort of thing. And then I remember I was watching The Apprentice one night at home, and they were doing like a marketing task, and they had to come up with like a cereal box, and they were terrible. They were the crappiest cereal boxes you can imagine. And I thought, I could do better than that. So I just like drew a cereal box and thought, what is it that they're doing? And it was a digital marketing campaign. And then I applied to an admin role, just a general marketing admin role. And it was for a chocolate factory near me. Not the Willy Wonka one, but we did get free chocolate. So they sort of had me doing a bit of everything because they were launching a new product. So I was writing product descriptions for it, a chocolate kit. Making the cold calls, so doing everything marketing wise and doing everything sales was really sort of broad. And then that was the first time I saw the Yoast plugin on a WordPress website, and saw the traffic lighting system. So I thought, oh, I'll try and get all those red signals to green and see what happens. And the site started to improve. And then I was speaking to my manager, and she said, oh, that's actually an SEO practice. I'm like, what on earth's that? So I started Googling it, getting familiar with it. And I spoke to my dad about it, and he was a bit like, if you want to sort of do well in an industry, you either need to sort of niche down and specify on one service, or just try and get promoted in a company. And I thought, if I just put all my efforts into this one section of digital marketing, I'll become more of an expert and people will come to me. So from there, I've worked an in-house SEO role, purely SEO, then worked for an agency, went freelance back at the start of the pandemic, and then had a bit of a blip where I tried to take on too much work, then got my wife pregnant, so I thought I need a steady job. So I got a steady job 2 years ago at an agency, an e-commerce specific agency, and then left them at the mid-January, and then start of February, I've just started up full-time freelance again, and it seems to be going better this time.
Good. I'm going to say that the story you was saying there, I think most people in the industry just stumble upon things. It's very, very rare. I talked to somebody, said, yes, I planned all this out, and it's done. Something happened, or there's a conversation, and I just stumbled into it, you know. And I think that it's reality, you know. And what you said about trying to focus on one area of digital marketing seems the way to go, because nowadays people want more of the specialists out of it. Have you found that?
100%. And I do label myself as a T-shaped marketer, I think the concept's called, where they've got a specialism, but they do have a broad knowledge of digital marketing as well. So I've got some fundamental knowledge of social media, Google Ads, and all that kind of thing. But I think it's a level of sort of braveness to niche down, I think, as well, because people do, they'll give you requests for other things. You'll start seeing information on social media about, oh, the PPC is the next big thing, AI is the next big thing. So it takes a bit of mental toughness to go, no, I'm sticking to my lane. I'm going to get really deep inside this one bit of knowledge. And you feel like niching down sometimes as well, like you're giving up work as well. So you're putting money away to provide for your family. But I think it is the way to go. And even if it doesn't end up being that one particular service that suits you the best, then you can always translate that knowledge to something else. It's like, even because I've gone quite deep into SEO now, I feel like I'd make a good Google Ads specialist if I transferred to that, because a lot of the fundamentals of digital marketing apply to all of them.
Yeah.
But I've definitely noticed that.
Yeah. So why e-commerce SEO rather than anything else, technical or any of the other subsections?
I think the reason I love e-commerce SEO so much is the attribution is very clear. It's very apparent. If you optimize a product page or a collection page, the money goes up, hopefully. But you can directly attribute the money to that optimization. It's a little bit trickier with service clients. I've noticed there are ways of doing it, and lead generation SaaS clients. But with e-commerce, you can, that's the kind of main reason. You can literally see the numbers go up as the traffic goes up.
Yeah, but on the other side of the coin, there's nowhere for you to hide, are there?
Exactly. And I think it puts that level of pressure on you that you do need at some point. You've got to test what you're saying. It's at the start of my career, I didn't really like e-commerce because I was like, oh God, if I mess this up, a $5,000 a month client can become £1,000. They can lose a lot of money quickly. But I feel like I'm at the right stage of my career where I can take that bit of a gamble, and I back myself now to do it.
Yeah. So when you first went freelance, what would you say the most important learning curve for you personally was?
I think because I came across a freelance opportunity the first time, someone contacted me and said it was a white label project, and they said they've got quite a few clients, can you look after them, basically. So it was an opportunity that came to me, but now I've decided to kind of go this way. I think just there's a lot of mindset things. I think just mental resilience, just everybody's learning. I think having a good attitude towards people is a massive element. If you don't trust people implicitly and you think that everyone's out to get you, that's going to come off when you speak to people. But if you think there's enough money to go around, there's enough opportunities to go around, it's a lot of some of this stuff's in your book as well, Mark, that I've read. But it really does reflect. People have that instinct. They can sense the desperation, or they can sense the insecurity from you. But if you really just believe, you know what, generally people are pretty nice. There's serial killers out there, obviously, but that, like, generally people want to do good work and want to earn money for the family or the friends. It's a good attitude to have, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, over the years, it's about really demonstrating what you say you can do, you know. And I think if you demonstrate things and you deliver what you say you can deliver, it's usually going full belt. But there are obviously obstacles that come in the way, like business challenges, like all these other things. And I think it's just a simple case of communication. I think not hiding anything, moving forward. And I think if you have a good communication aspect with your clients, then, you know, an understanding that not everything is ABC, you know, then I think it runs fine. Would you agree?
Yeah, and that reminds me of an example of why the first time I went freelancing, I don't like to say failed, but I ended up taking a job, is that I didn't communicate. I thought, how do I earn more money from this? Because I wasn't earning my income target. I thought, right, I'm going to double my time with this client and charge them twice as much, and they'll get double the value. So I just contacted them and said, listen, I'm doing 10 hours a month for you. I'm going to do 20 hours a month. It's going to cost double, but I'll do a lot more work. And he just sort of didn't agree to it. But I didn't demonstrate the value and communicate effectively exactly why that would benefit him and his business. So looking back now, it's completely understandable why he didn't do it. He didn't feel the emotional or intellectual need to spend more money. Well, why would you? It's communication's everything.
It is. And when you are, as a freelance e-commerce SEO, is when you are selling yourself into potential clients, what's the sort of mindset that you were in?
Do you mean before I'm sort of speaking to them all?
Yeah, obviously there's a conversation started. So how do you sell yourself into those clients as a freelancer?
I think there are a few sort of staple things that put freelancers apart from agencies. So some of the times they've had a bad experience with an agency. Like, I've been paying all this money to an agency, I've not got the results, and I just want someone who's a bit cheaper or whatever, who can deliver the same sort of thing. And I just sort of emphasize that I'm not going to talk in technical jargon. It's all going to be sort of straight talking. You're going to be able to see the results, and I talk them through the concepts. And one of the concepts that really resonates with them is, and I've sort of not coined the phrase, but a grandchild page. I can talk to you about that if you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so it's not sort of a original concept, I wouldn't say, but I'd say it's looking for opportunities on a website where there's going to be a high conversion rate, there might be less search volume, but these are top quality entry points that if someone enters through this search query, the chances are they're probably going to buy. There's a high level of going to buy. And the way to sort of find these is you have parent pages. So for like a furniture store, that might be sofas, for example. So that's the parent category. Then you'd have the child category, which would be leather sofas, and then you could have, and then what I look to do with these child categories, you might have different materials, different sizes, different number of seats, for example. If you combine two of these child categories, then you result in a sub category or grandchild page. So it might be blue leather sofas or brown three-seater sofas. Now, this doesn't apply to every client and every website, because they might not have enough product coverage. So if you've only got one product to fit in this blue leather sofa category, you're better off having a product page, because the user's going to be a little bit disappointed if they Google blue leather sofas, there's only one option. But I find a lot of these, especially smaller brands who've not got the authority, and they're trying to compete, say, with sofas that would be like Dreams or DFS. This is a way for them to get sort of an entry point where they can rank above these. So these smaller brands, if they do have a blue leather sofas collection and they've got five that they can add to that collection with product tags or however the taxonomy of the site's set up, DFS might not have that. They might not either have the product coverage, or they might not have the page. But when I know that this, when I knew that this concept really resonated, is when I spoke to my mum about it. I said, imagine you were shopping, in Meadowhall, which is our local shopping centre, and you were looking for a brown pair of shoes, and you're a size 6, and brown leather pair of shoes, size 6, and you saw a shop that says brown shoes, you go, oh, that could be quite a good option. They might have it, they might not. They might not have leather ones, they might not have size 6, but I might go in. Imagine you saw one that said brown leather shoes. Then you'd be like, this talks to me. It's like God's come down and created a shop just for me. So it really does make sense to target these high intent terms, but it's looking for the opportunities. It's you shouldn't just create every combination of every different feature that you've got and create 1,000 different pages. It's looking for the right ones.
Yeah, it really does make sense, because after all, we're guiding people down into finding what they actually want or need, you know, specifically. But I've seen this done very well, and I've also seen it done very badly. But how, when you are actually focusing so deep into a site, how do you look at things like canonicalization and duplication and things like that?
Well, there are different nuances with different CMSs. So Shopify is one that I tend to work on, and you've probably seen it before. It has the /product/collection issue that it always starts with. And this, if these grandchild pages are created, but they still canonicalize to the parent or the child page, then the odds are that the directive is going to end up with those being indexed. So it's important that if you're giving this method a try and implementing it, make sure it has a self-referencing canonical, make sure it's got internal linking, make sure it fits in the structure, make sure you're giving signals to Google that this is an important page as well. And I've noticed it a lot. It works a lot better on sites that already have some sort of organic standing. So if they have content around these queries and around these topics, like content around leather shoes or what I was talking about earlier, the pages will get indexed quicker and you'll see results quicker. But ones that don't have that standing, they need a little bit more TLC. But yeah.
Right. So if like an SEO is thinking, this sounds like a good thing to do on our clients, what's the thought process from turning the idea into reality, but coming from a business perspective? That, okay, last thing we want to do is create loads and loads of things that nobody wants, as nobody's searching for, or things like that. What's your thought process?
My thought process, there's two sort of elements that help to not persuade the business owner or the commercial person in the company. But number one, that it's low risk, because it doesn't take a lot of time to create a collection generally, unless the CMS is a nightmare. You've already got the product most of the time, unless you've got to look at product variants, but then that's a deeper sort of technical level. It doesn't take a lot of resource to do or anything like that. You can maybe get a copywriter to add a bit of above the fold copy and stuff like that. And then just test it with one or two. You don't need to go, like I said earlier, you don't need to go gung-ho and create 30 new pages, which might not index. Customers might be thinking, what are all these new pages? This is a bit strange. But just test one or two out for an extended period of time and see what happens. And then, number three would be make it data-led as well. Use Search Console data. If you've got a parent or a subcollection that's starting to get impressions for one of these longer tail keywords, which might not be quite relevant for a broader collection, Like, if you've got a brown leather sofas collection and it's starting to get a few impressions for brown leather three-seater sofas, right? It's not really relevant for that collection completely. And you've got a few three-seater leather products, then that's a good opportunity. So you can literally, so look, listen, we've got 100 impressions. Our average position is 70th for this query. We should probably target it with a new page.
Yeah. So when you say we should target with a brand new page, are those subcategory pages, is that what you're talking about in the infrastructure?
Yeah, exactly. There's clever ways of doing it as well. So it's kind of in a navigation on a site, there are two sort of areas that I tend to look to on an e-commerce website. There's the main navigation, and then there's the faceted navigation or the filtering system. And my old agency that I work for, Blink, they've just brought out a really good new app which allows you to create a faceted navigation system as well using product tags. So for these sub collections, one way of doing it, and sometimes it can take a little bit of dev work depending on the setup, but if someone clicks on a filter in the navigation on the left hand side or whatever, it directs you straight to this sub collection, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's all about getting to where you need to be as easy as possible. So yeah. Where can you find it? And I think that in the industry, there's lots and lots of talk about internal linking and all that, but I personally feel that so many people's getting it wrong.
Yeah.
For me, it's not about linking words together. It's about making it as easy as possible to find what you need or want. And I think that when you step back away from outside the SEO and look at these e-commerce sites, personally, I like to get somebody in the family to say, well, what do you think of that? Can you find what you want? Or I'll say to them, you know, find me a three-seater brown leather sofa on this site. And I'll just watch them.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that sometimes you need to step back away from that, because if the actual customer can't easily find what they want looking for, it doesn't matter what you do.
Yeah. They're the best people to test things on, because they don't have that insider knowledge, don't they? So it's just getting someone random off the street with no digital knowledge to just see where they navigate to, and sometimes you can be really surprised where they end up. But yeah, that's where I knew when I started speaking to family members and friends, they were like, yeah, that makes complete sense. And I was like, right, that's how I'll speak to e-commerce owners about it. But yeah, there's so much information out there on internal linking. I think it's the fundamentals of keep it natural, and if there's no reason for an internal link to be there, don't add one.
Yeah. So with e-commerce sites, what's your opinion on the whole external link building?
I've spent time link building, and I've done digital PR campaigns for clients in the past. But with this strategy, I don't really feel the need. I'm not disregarding link building or anything like that. I know how beneficial it can be, but I've seen small sites rank for these sorts of queries in top without any link building. So, yeah, I mean, it can really frustrate me sometimes when I see people on LinkedIn or speak to people and they're like, well, this SEO tool's told me this page has got more authority and I need to build 20, 90 DA links to rank for this query. And I'm like, just make a page that better fits the user intent, and then Google will reward it. But that's not to say link building's obviously a bad practice or anything.
Yeah, I think for over 20 years, I've always focused on doing what you can. I mean, link building for me has always been an additional thing with any business I've worked with. You know, it's always been, well, what can we get what you already have working a lot better? You know, and what can we do relatively quickly to create positive impact?
You've nailed it there. It's probably the quickest way of having a positive impact. And link building takes time and a lot of effort, in my experience. And taking shortcuts and buying links might have a short-term impact, but sustainably it always seems to bite you in the arse, from what I've seen. Yeah. But this content, creating new collection pages, like I said, it's probably the fastest thing you can do to get new customers, from my experience.
So when you've created these collection pages, then what? Obviously, you don't want the client to leave because you can't do all. What's the focus moving on? Because obviously that should be just the groundwork. So how do you promote that business moving forward?
So I see sort of any sort of campaign in two phases. Well, first of all, and it's been 8 years that I've been sort of doing this now, so I sort of do this naturally. When I look at a new website, I look for any technical issues. I still do this where that'll be preventing either the current or a new collection page from indexing. If there's any issues with indexing, that needs to be rectified quickly, or it's not going to be successful anyway. Then the research, then get these new pages live fast within the first month so we can start getting the data through. Search Console data will start coming in. And then I see phase two, after these pages are live, I like to call it kind of reactive actions or reactive strategy. I don't know the exact term. But then we use the data to make further optimizations. So if I publish 10 new collection pages, these are working, these aren't. Why aren't they? Again, there's even the next level. These grandchild pages might be getting impressions for something that's not relevant. So we might need to just retarget and tweak them a little bit. It's basically the tweaking phase, but that lasts forever. It's a bit like going to the gym, isn't it? It's like you get your diet right and then you're doing exercises and tweaking your form for 50 years sort of thing.
Oh, no, no. It must be about 30 years since I entered the gym.
I actually, in a weird sort of way, I had like a bit of a kitty at the start of the year, and I thought, am I ever going to hire a business coach or a personal trainer? and I sent them both a message on Twitter, and the PT replied first. I thought, I'll hire him. He was a fantastic personal trainer, but like a week after being in the gym, I was just like, I hate it here. I just want to be at home with a Chinese.
I mean, when I was in the early 20s, I used to do kickboxing 3 days a week and go out to the gym 3 days a week. Then the pub 1 day a week. That's a totally different life before children. moving forward, it's for you yourself personally, where do you see your career heading?
I think,
where would you want it to go?
I think I just want to earn good money, work with good clients. I've got a young child now, and just enjoy. Not that it's a lifestyle business, because I do think about it all the time when I'm at home on weekends, but I think a bit of a dream is for my wife not to work as well, so that she doesn't have, because 20 years ago you didn't need that, did you? You could provide on a single income, and that's, we've been shafted a bit with tax and stuff with that. If it, that's sort of my next goal within the next couple of years, so my wife doesn't have to work. She works in the NHS as well, so it's, yeah, when I come back, I've had a tough day on the keyboards, and she's like,
you don't know anything, boy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What? This keyboard doesn't type itself. Come on. but yeah, so that's the sort of first goal. I've got around 8 clients at the minute. A couple of them aren't e-commerce and aren't direct clients, which I am really enjoying working on those. And a lot of the concepts do apply. So I've got a service client, shall we say, who does like a business service, and the grandchild page concept works for them. So what I've done on his site, he's got a list in his main menu. He's got a list of services. He's got a list of industries that he does work for. And I said, why don't you combine the two? So you do accountancy for beauty companies, for example. So you've got an accounting page and you've got a beauty industries page. Why don't you make a page specifically for that? Did that, ranking first within a few weeks, started to get an inquiries through from that. So that this sort of concept does apply across. And yeah, I mean, from my goals, I'm just riding the wave, seeing what happens. It's with AI, I'm trying to utilize that. And I love learning and love growing. I think that's another freelancing attitude that's really important, just remembering that you don't know everything. You are always learning. And no one else knows everything. So if they pretend they do, they're talking crap. And yeah, I think I've really, not to sort of ramble on, but I think you've got to sort of know yourself really well. And one concept I've learned this time is find out what scares other people, which you don't mind doing. Some people are terrified of technical SEO migrations, for example. I'm not that scared of them after doing a few. So I don't mind offering that service. A lot of people are terrified of making cold calls. I was in a call center in the trenches selling broadband, getting tennis balls thrown everywhere and getting on a rickety bus home feeling depressed or whatever. I don't mind cold calling web design agencies saying, have you got any SEO work? I spent a couple of weeks ago, I spent a full day doing that. And within 4 hours, I had a new client. And they were like, I just appreciate that someone's actually spoke to, because they must get 100 LinkedIn messages. They must get 1,000 emails every week. You ring, you get straight through to the director. I was talking to for like an hour. So yeah, it's just finding that thing that people are a bit fearful of that you don't mind doing.
Do you know what? As you can imagine, I speak to a lot of freelancers, and you've hit the nail on the head. Picking the phone up terrifies most people, you know, but that's one of the differentiators, because it's all about starting a conversation and what's the worst that can happen. No, or not yet, right? Mm. So it's about turning the no's into not yet on the conversation, you know. Mm. It is. I think that so many freelancers are stuck in the, what I call the technical side, the doing side, that they'll spend all day talking to other SEOs on Twitter rather than picking the phone up to a potential customer.
Mm.
You know, and I think that's one thing that scares them, but it's part and parcel of building a business up, because I look at it, networking, as talking to the people that don't know you yet. And yeah, that's one of the ways around it. And it is scary, but obviously with your background, you know, it's just something that, you know, a gap in the market you've seen.
Yeah, and it's, I think, I used, when I first started calling people that in, when I was 18 or whatever, I used to think, please don't pick up, please don't pick up. But now I'm like, if they've got the problem that I'm looking for, I've got a really good solution for that. So they'll be happy. They'll be buzzing. I could make their whole week. And the guy I spoke, without going into specifics, the guy I spoke to, he'd had a migration and his traffic had tanked because they had a few international HREF lang problems and stuff like that. He was over the moon to be speaking to me at that time. And there's nothing. Yeah, and I think the next sort of step, sorry, following on from your last question, I need to get better at delegation and account management. That's what I think business acquisition I'm pretty good at, or I've got them differentiated from other freelancers, but delegation seems to be something that I struggle with. So maybe I'm a bit of a control freak. I delegated some work a couple of years ago to someone. When I was sort of talking them through the work, I just said, so do you know about keyword research? Have you done that before? And they just went, yep. Yeah. And have you done any technical auditing? Yep. Yeah. Have you done this? Yep, yep. Gave them the work and it just wasn't what the brief said. And then I realized that they need to either expand on those answers or ask the right questions back for me to believe that they've got the expertise for the task. And it's demonstrating your expertise is not about saying the right thing always. It's about asking the right questions. But yeah, I do need to work on being a control freak.
Yeah, I don't think it's being a control freak, because I take it you're talking about you outsourcing certain parts of your customer contract to other people. Hmm. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So like the keyword research stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So it's your name on the line. It's not them that's going to get the bad name if it's not done right. So I think from your perspective, I mean, oh my God, finding good freelancers that can actually deliver what they say they can deliver is a lot harder than you'd imagine. It really is. And I'm saying this as someone that's, you know, worked with lots and lots of freelancers over the years. And sometimes you just want someone to do certain areas of a job so you don't have to think about it.
Yeah. 100%. And I was speaking to someone last week. And I'm thinking about working with this guy, and he said something, and a light bulb went off. I was like, I've not thought of it like that. So he sort of taught me something new straight away. And I was like, I want to work with him. He just seems the right. He just said, have you thought about it like this? It was like a schema problem on AHRS had a schema issue. And he just said, right, have a look in the source code, check if it's an actual issue. Search Console's flagging it, that's flagging it. But this is the thing with these tools as well, and sometimes I forget that they're not gospel, that you need to manually take a look sometimes. And having a second pair of eyes is invaluable as a freelancer, like you said. That's why when I do find the right one, I'm going to cling to him, I think, and not let him go.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's not about how to do something. It's about understanding why something's happened. And I think that's the key difference. Because, you know, anyone can chuck a site through SEMrush or Ahrefs or any other site bulb and just like, yeah, do that, yeah, do that. But if they don't understand why that's happening, then that them are the triggers, you know, because I've always said, it's like, do you want an SEO robot or an SEO marketer?
Yeah.
And that's the way I think about it. And if you are just a robot, then you're never going to be worth more than the norm.
That's what keeps me optimistic about the industry carrying on, because I'm like, as good as AI ever gets, it's never going to have that Socratic questioning or that deeper sort of thinking behind it, because it's not got the full context of the business. Exactly. So I think we'll beat the robots, Mark, which is good.
Yeah, I think that's what AI is going to replace, because I just asked someone only yesterday, I said, okay, does ChatGPT understand your customers? You know, does it? You know, then that's that, and it's just starting, just asking them that one thing, thinks, oh, right, yeah. You know, and all these different things. And I think as an SEO, it don't matter if you're freelance or in-house or agency side or whatever, I think there's a lot, people need to go a lot deeper into it. It's not just about, we'll build your content hub and buy some links type of thing. You know, we really, as an industry, need to start understanding the business, understanding the business challenges behind it, understanding the business customers, and understanding the growth potential. You know, if you put a plan forward and, you know, the growth trajectory will actually create more issues within the business, cost of capacity, then positives, then that's what you need to know as well. And I think from your perspective, do you see yourself fitting into that model when you're working with clients?
It depends on the client, I think. If they have a multi-level hierarchy, it can be a little bit more difficult. But this is why I do sort of attest to people if they've only worked for agencies, work in-house for a while, because you really get to see the nuts and bolts behind a commercial business and you understand how they operate. I'm just starting to, as a freelancer, get into that a little bit. And yeah, you want to become less of a freelancer. You're a business owner. That's how you've got to view yourself. And you're a strategic partner. You're not just a cog in the machine. You are the machine sort of thing. It's got to be, you've got to see the impact, which is why I'm asking simple questions to e-commerce store owners when I'm speaking to them, just like, which product gives you the best profit margin? A lot of SEOs don't ask that sort of stuff. They just go, I've increased your traffic by 20% for that product. That profit gets 1% margin. They don't care. If you increase it by 20% for a product that gets 50% margin, they're sending you soppy WhatsApps and they love it. So that business understanding does come with time, I think, as well. And just speaking to really commercially adept people. Like, I work in it's not a co-working space, but there's a lot of business owners in the office I work in, and just speaking to them about their day-to-day problems on the operational side really informs what I'm doing. It's like search volumes and all that sort of stuff. You just don't, a lot of business owners don't really care. Some might be interested and get more interested, they've got more time, but in general, it's just another language to them. If like a plumber came to my house and started saying that why 21 gigabolts been fixed, but I don't care, is the toilet ready or not? Like, it's one of them. I've been not looking to buy a house, but we've had a few valuations of our house in the past couple of weeks. Three estate agents have been round and they've asked a total of two questions each. Why are you moving? And what do you think of that price? And why are you moving? We've just said, oh, we want a bigger house. They've not delved any deeper below that surface level. There's a lot of other reasons why we're looking at other houses. And the prices, the valuations they've given us, I've got an online valuation that's got the exact same thing. And then they've told me about how good the company is for 10 minutes. Now they sell more than the other estate agents. to find the real emotional reason why we're happy to move. Why are we moving's a stressful thing, isn't it? It's why are we happy to go through that stress? It's not just for a bigger house, really, is it? It's deeper than that. But yeah, I think it's just a good practice to have in general.
Yeah, I think going back when I did my own stint as freelancing, I actually, the clients I work with, I actually went in their business, in the business premises, said, you know, can I come in for 2 or 3 days and just sit there, find me a desk and I'll potter around and talk to people and understand things. And because sometimes when you're an outsider, there's certain things you don't see. And I think that really, for me, and it did help that I used to go in and hand deliver my invoice when I went. So each month, and it really made a difference. You know,
it just probably helps you get paid as well.
It's not the fact that I went in, it's just understanding, and like I could just talk to people about the day-to-day aspects, and it opened up lots of new opportunities that I'd never ever been aware of if I'd have never gone in. And those opportunities made the businesses a lot of money.
It's communication, I think, as well. I think spotting those opportunities, just circling back to what we said at the beginning, is I'm an email chain sometimes with people that I've never met, and the email a certain way, and it might seem quite cold, quite warm, whatever, and they're talking about these problems. When you meet them, they're a completely different person, and they're really open, and you can look for these opportunities with them, rather than if you just send them a quick email at 5 p.m. on a Friday, they'll just sort of disregard it. But I think it's not possible for everything nowadays, but I think I've said to every client that I've got in a local area, I'm like, I'm happy to come to yours one day a week and just get that real deep insight. And you can really see how the offices, how the hierarchy actually works, how the product's made, all this sort of stuff. And then you can sell the products better for them. At the end of the day, if you're seeing the product design process, I think you have a better affinity with the product, affinity with the company. It's just, and that's really all, again, that's anti-robot, if you like. It's the old-fashioned sort of traditional ways that I don't think will ever die.
Yeah, I think, again, it's just understanding the business at an in-depth level. And I do, you know, I've been around mattress factories and things, and there's always something. Because I explain it to SEOs as you're dealing with people who are doing the same thing day after day in the business, right? They won't tell you what the opportunities are because to them it's just the norm. Yeah? And it's up to you as the SEO to ask certain questions in a certain way to spot those opportunities. You see? And when they get that concept right and think, oh, yeah, well, like I went into one place, we just do what we do. There's nothing different about us. We just do what we do. But there was. And we could target it and it would be a differentiator. But to them, it was just the norm.
It's completely, they're so sort of insular in their little world that it's a bit like being a marriage therapist or whatever. You can see a different perspective that they don't think of before because you're external from it. It's No, it's really good. I'm going to ask them all again if I can visit their offices after this, I think.
Yeah, I think it's spotting the differentiators. It's spotting the what I call the added value. So what, as a freelancer, can you bring to the table that's an added value they're not already doing?
Yeah. And it's with the added value, I've noticed with some clients that I'm working with who are so sort of in that, it tends to be the ones that are not as digitally sort of involved. They're in their own service. Over months, with the responses you give for certain questions, they start thinking like an SEO. They start going, oh, Joe said this and he's responded with this. So, so some software isn't gospel. And not every error has to be fixed. And we can create this page if need be. And they'll start spotting opportunities and just double checking them with you. So you're changing their whole mindset on their own website and changing the way they think. It's an education process, a lot of it, I think. But yeah, and you're both always learning. I think that's why it's mutually beneficial. And when the relationship sort of stops being mutually beneficial, then might be time to rethink it. But yeah, that's a really good point.
But one thing you pointed out there, and I call it prioritization, which an awful lot of people in the industry and agencies and get wrong. You know, so for me, it's spotting the opportunities that's going to move the needle for the business. Because, you know, we can all spend 5 weeks fixing 20,404 issues or, you know, all the, you know, but is it actually going to move the needle? You know, if a client's paying you X amount per hour or day rate or whatever, is that money going to help move the business needle and the business goals?
Mm. Yeah, 100%. And that changes every few years in an SEO's mind, I think. They might think, this is what moves the needle, then this, then this, then this. But sometimes it's this for this client, then this for this client. I think you're a bit like a doctor, aren't you? First off, you look at what's life-threatening. And then what's just going to make them feel a bit better? But yeah, prioritization's probably the other number one thing that every SEO, once they learn how to do that properly, they can call themselves an SEO, I'd probably say. Because before that, they're letting prioritization be told to them by a tool or someone else.
The years, how have you sort of got better at prioritization?
I think it's been using it's a good, very good question, that using the SERPs. I use the SERPs more now than I ever have, so just genuinely checking what comes up for which queries and checking the results, not relying on tools and software and LinkedIn opinion for what to prioritize. It's constant. The information's constant. You're on LinkedIn. It's, SGE's coming, panic. Better get ready for that. What do we do to change that? AI's coming. This new core update's happened. Don't get me wrong. I'm always checking the data and seeing how the keyword rankings and the data and the sales and all that sort of stuff is moving. But I just make sure to stick to the fundamentals and just keep sort of believe after a certain point, you've just got to believe in yourself. I think like the first 2 years of an SEO's career tend to be, right, we'll get publish good content, get good links, make sure the site's working okay. Like pretty standard stuff. And then the mid part of the career is overthinking. Oh God, we've got to fix this and this algorithm, panda penguin. And then after that for a bit, they go, just write good content, get links again. Once they're past that sort of stage, So you sort of revert back. It's a bit like the gym again, isn't it? It's like eat good, lift weights, and then you start tinkering everything, and then you get past that. You're like, oh, just eat good and lift weights. Just keep it simple. Just really keep it simple and think, if a user landed on this page, would they be happy with it? And generally, 99% of the time, your instinct can tell you. But yeah, I mean, looking at certain areas of the website, I tend to look at the category pages before the product pages and the blog post pages, because I know the category pages are an entry point. That can really push sales quickly if they're improved, what they've already got. I look at the main nav before the footer, because I know the main nav's used quite a lot. If we can add another collection into that pretty quickly or page, then that's going to give a good signal. A lot of it's learned, or it becomes second nature after a bit. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I have recently found that some e-commerce sites where the informational content was ranking very well, now, for those same terms, Google's ranking the category pages instead.
Mm.
You know, so it is changing. So it's constantly keeping up to date. But because the time has rocked on, is there anything we haven't spoken about so far you believe that the audience needs to know?
I'm trying to think. If you get an analysis paralysis and it's information overload, which tends to be the sort of number one problem when I'm speaking to SEOs and clients and that sort of thing, they're like, I've just seen this. What do we do about this? Just stick to the fundamentals, stick to Google's guidelines and use your instinct. And yeah, just have a bit of belief as well. You'll be all right. If you're publishing good stuff, you'll be all right. Chill.
Good. And on that note, what conversations would you like to have with people and where can they find you?
Yeah, I'm happy to speak to anyone in the industry, e-commerce store owners, if the traffic has tanked or they're struggling to flog chocolate bars or whatever it might be. And my website is fisherseo.com.
Brilliant. And on that note, many thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Cheers.
You've been listening to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast with me, Mark A. Preston. Join us next time as I interview more top SEO professionals.